Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Pacers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can get a daily dose of great information about your favorite NBA and NFL team, including the Pacers right here. And this episode is presented by SeatGeek and their fantastic SeatGeek app, which you can use along with promo code LOPACERS to earn $20 back on your first ticket purchase. And my name is Tom Lewis of IndyCornrows.com, always here to bring you the latest news and notes about the Pacers. Want to share what I see and hear along the way. And on this episode, we'll look back at the weekend split with the loss in Dallas and a home win in Portland, with neither of those games going as expected. But fittingly, the Pacers finished 1-1, which matches their 500 lifestyle that they've been leading, as they are back home to play the Charlotte Hornets on Monday with a 12-12 record. So we'll look ahead to that Charlotte game as well as the state of the playing rotation and how a minor injury to Monte Ellis may alter things going forward. As always, want to make sure you check in with any comments or questions. You can hit me at email at indycornrows@gmail.com and on Twitter at IndyCornrows. All right, it was great to be back home in Indiana after I was also on the road when the Pacers were last week. But seeing the Pacers come up with the comeback win over the Blazers on Saturday night, 118-111, was huge. And at this point, kind of salvaged the early season, or so it seemed, because after a bad loss in Dallas on Friday night, as the Pacers ran out of gas in the last game of their five-game road trip out west, it seemed like things could really start sliding the wrong way with that matchup against Portland, a team that really gave them fits in the first game on that road trip. But in Dallas, after a good start, it seemed like the Pacers might be able to come home with a 3-2 record and have all kinds of good feelings. After that, they'd be a game above 500. They'd have won two in a row. They break that string where they win one, lose one, win one, which now is at 7. And it might be something that they can build on going forward. Well, as it turns out, the early shooting of Paul George didn't hold up. C.J. Miles made 6 3-pointers, and you hate to waste an effort like that, but Pacers did. And again, it was a struggle for Monte Ellis, who was 0 for the night. Didn't score any points, had 2 assists. Jeff Teague had 10 points and 6 assists. But for the most part, they just couldn't slow down Wes Matthews, who had 26 points, and Harrison Barnes had a nice night with 25 points and 8 rebounds, made some big shots. The Mavericks were with the worst record in the league at the time and had just gotten pounded by the Sacramento Kings, which led to a players-only meeting and a little bit of desperation among that group. So they were ready to face the Pacers. They've been shorthanded, but they weren't looking for excuses. They're playing without Dirk Nowitzki, J.J. Barea, Andrew Bogut, so they're going to struggle. But on this night, the Pacers had them going early and were never able to run away and kill their will, and instead seemed to embolden the Mavericks as they came back, and the Pacers were punchless down the stretch before losing 111-103. So that set up a not-so-fun return home. Now, normally that last game of a road trip is a trap game, brutal game for teams, often lost, as is the first game home after a long road trip, just because you're coming home and there's all kinds of things going on at home. Now, this was a little different for the Pacers because they were playing a back-to-back, which I don't know who schedules a back-to-back in this situation, but it may have actually, you know, in hindsight, Pacers won. Maybe it helped them, but I think one way it did help them on the part where there's that emotional returning home getting in the way of preparing. They didn't have time to remember that they were home. I mean, they basically got home and then had to get ready to play. So there was no going home, doing laundry, hanging out too long with the family or doing anything like that. They had to get right back into game mode. So in that sense, it probably helped. Now, fatigue-wise, it didn't help, that's for sure. The team was already tired, and they admitted they were really worn out heading into the game. They looked every bit of the worn-out team as the game started, and Portland put up 44 points in the first quarter, which is remarkable. That tandem of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum was having their way with the Pacers, and it seemed like there was going to be no slowing them down. As it was, the Blazers were able to score 71 first half points, which was actually two less than the Pacers gave up to the Blazers in their first meeting out in Portland at the start of the road trip. So maybe there was hope. Well, the hope was that the Blazers don't play that great of defense either, and the Pacers were actually hanging around within 7 points by the half after being down 20. So the hope was there, but really, considering the fatigue and the way it seemed that the Blazers could turn it on and score at will, a win seemed like it wasn't going to happen. But it did, and that's why they play. And it was a beautiful thing. Really, in the second half, the bench was able to provide a spark, get the team back in the game, cut the lead down to a manageable amount, and then Paul George came in, and after looking pretty good early, looked like he was really running out of gas, but then came on and scored 15 points in the last 6.5 minutes to carry the Pacers down the stretch like a superstar should, and really made big shot after big shot. He had the ball in his hands, initiated the offense, created opportunities, many for himself, but that is fine. He's got to have the ball in his hands to make the plays when they need him, and that's what he was able to do. Finished him with 37 points. Again, 15 of those in the last 6 minutes of the game. So that was awesome to see, along with the win, but just seeing Paul George have really his biggest game at crunch time of the season like that and throwing the team on his back to get it done was fantastic. Now, he credited the bench with giving him the juice to do that because of their effort to get the team back in the game. It would end up being an outstanding team win, and now it sets them up for a game on Monday night with the Charlotte Hornets, another team that took him to the woodshed in the last time they played in Charlotte. So the Pacers will try and bounce back against a team that they're looking up at in the Eastern Conference standings. So if you want to check out that game, you know where you got to go. SeatGeek will get you tickets to get into the field house because, as you know, SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether that's courtside, the club seats, or the upper level. Now, you know, I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I always like to check out what good seats are available for the Pacers home games. And with the Hornets in town on a Monday, there should be good seats. So pop open the app, punch in Hornets Pacers, another tap, and boom, there we go. Now, you can get a very good lower level seat right now for $29. That's great. $8 upper level. Plenty of good seats available, plenty of good prices. Check them out on SeatGeek. Because with SeatGeek, you always get the best deals on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. So prices can vary depending upon where you shop, but with SeatGeek, you always find the lowest available price. and SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best values that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guaranteed. Best of all, for my listeners, you can get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So to get the rebate, you have to download the SeatGeek app and then go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code. Then enter the promo code LOPACERS. That's all caps, one word, LOPACERS. And then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LOPACERS today. So back to PG taking over down the stretch. I have my concerns, I'm not going to lie. In the early in the third quarter, Pacers ran a pin down. Paul came off wide open for a mid-range jumper. Rose up, and that thing barely grazed the front iron. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, his legs are toast. And it just seemed like this team was not going to have the juice to get back in the game. But fortunately, as PG mentioned after the game, that bench unit came in, and they gave the team a big boost. And part of that was an adjustment by Nate McMillan, who mentioned that they were playing early, sagging off the big guys in the paint to try and get a handle on Lillard in particular, Damian Lillard, abusing them on pick and rolls and getting into the paint and creating opportunities. Now, he really went at Al Jefferson when he was on the court. So two adjustments they made was to move the big guys up because McCollum and Lillard and others were just getting open three-pointers and hurting them that way. And so they moved the bigs up to try and help defend that and contest further out on the perimeter. And then they also altered the rotation. So Miles Turner was basically tied with Damian Lillard. So they kept him on the floor until the end of the third quarter when Lillard left. Then they brought in Al Jefferson, who they were able to hide a little easier on defense and then use him on the offensive end. He had a positive impact on the game from the scoreboard standpoint in that stretch in the fourth quarter. And again, that cut the deficit down. And Paul George entered the game with about 8.5 minutes to go. Pacers were only down by 1 point. So it was time for him to take over. And nothing happened for a couple minutes. And the Pacers were down by 4. And I actually thought, okay, what's this going to be? Are we ever going to get something out of Paul George in this situation? I actually tweeted, yo, PG, it's time. And it was as if that tweet went right into his ear because he scored in the next possession. He scored, it seemed like, every possession for the rest of the game, putting in 15 points again, a huge finish down the stretch. Signature play was about 30 seconds left. He missed a baseline jumper. Rebound bounced into a group. A guy you got to credit for the play is Miles Turner because he was fighting with Plumlee and I think Ed Davis for the rebound. It looked like Turner actually had possession of it or at least was in the best position. Paul George just swooped in, snagged it from all of them, turned around and dunked it. And that was kind of the dagger play of the game and put it away. And it was just a great finish. The field house was rocking as it does when the Pacers play that way. All they want to do is see the Pacers play well. Fans at the field house, and that place just rocks. It's fun to be in there when it's like that. And, you know, that defensive adjustment, I don't know if it was directly responsible or if, you know, the Blazers are having their own issues. They dumped a game, their prior game in Memphis after leading, and they had issues down the stretch in this game. Didn't look like the same team at all that had played in the first, at least the first half for sure, even through the third quarter as they were throwing the ball away, turnovers. After the PG dunk, they had the ball side out, took a 5 second call, couldn't even get the ball in. They really just melted down when the Pacers put the pressure on them and took the lead. So sometimes you're kind of myopic thinking about all the issues the Pacers have, But they aren't the only ones dealing with things throughout the years. And I think they caught the Blazers at kind of a fragile time with their psyche and were able to take advantage of it with that big finish down the stretch. So a huge win for the Pacers, desperately needed after, again, that loss in Dallas. They're back at 500 once again. They've alternated wins and losses for the past seven games and can't get that second win in a row. Fortunately, they haven't had the second loss in a row either to get sliding the wrong way, but they're going to have to face a big challenge with Charlotte coming in on Monday. And the Hornets have won three games, and then they lost their last game to Cleveland. Kemba Walker left that game early, but he banged knees with LeBron James, and really, you don't want to have a battle of body parts with LeBron. You're going to go down on that, and he had to leave the game, but there was nothing other than a contusion reported, and he remains probable to play against the Pacers, so that's not good news. Although, the way the Pacers play, if Kimba was out, they would probably lose for sure. So I can't explain it. It's just how it is with that group. They need things going against them so they can play like they have their backs against the wall for some reason. And this will be a good game to come out and show that they're going to be a better team than they were when they played in Charlotte. Now, one thing that kind of links that will be the playing rotation, who's available. Monte Ellis did not play in the second half of the game against Portland due to a groin injury. And he was actually playing pretty well in the first half. I ripped him for poor play in Dallas. But he wasn't the reason they were down so big completely. I mean, defensively, the guards struggled with Portland, but that's going to happen against that duo. But regardless, he was out the second half and remains questionable on Monday. Now, this could open up an opportunity, depending upon how severe the injury is, or if they want to use it as a good excuse to have Monte take a few days off without saying he's just resting, because he has looked like he needed a rest in the past few games, to be fair. And regardless, the last time the Pacers played the Hornets, they literally went right at Monte because of their length on the wing with Nicholas Batum, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. They took turns going at Monte. Whoever Monte was guarding at first, it was Kidd-Gilchrist. They went at him, posted him up, and he got loose. Then they switched to Batum, so they flip-flop, went right at Monte, and just took advantage of their size there. So regardless of what the Hornets are doing, it'll be interesting to see how the Pacers start the game if Monte is not available. And I would think that the way Rodney Stuckey is playing, they would want to keep him in that reserve role. McMillan has been letting Rodney finish games as it is. The last three games, Rodney's played the full fourth quarter. Monte didn't play in Dallas or in Phoenix. He was out against Portland, but I have a feeling it would have been the same way. Asked about that before the Portland game, and McMillan said that didn't have anything negative to say about Monte and really just lauded the play of Stuckey, saying he wanted to keep him in there. He was playing well, and it was more about Stuckey than anything about Monte. So, anyways, as far as the starting lineup, I would think maybe Glenn Robinson III might be a better matchup, especially in this game in particular with some bigger wing players for him to match up. And then that also alters the rotation a little bit and allows Stuckey to get loose with the second unit and provide the punch that he's been providing of late. But regardless, it should be a good game at the Fieldhouse, and we will be keeping an eye on reports out of Charlotte about Kemba Walker. He did his damage against the Pacers as well with 24 points and 10 assists in that last game. So after leaving that game in Cleveland, you never know after a day or two what something like that might flare up and be a problem that they don't want to risk against the Pacers. We'll see if he's ready for the Pacers. But the question will be, are the Pacers ready for Walker and the Hornets this time around? And, you know, after alternating between wins and losses those last seven games, that question remains a stumper and something that we're just going to have to watch. So, again, thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. And please feel free to send in any questions and comments via email at indiecornrows@gmail.com and on Twitter at indiecornrows. And as always, you can find us on audioboom.com or subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play, where all past episodes are available. So check them out. And that's all for now. You've been listening to Locked On Pacers on the Locked On Podcast Network. You got it.